I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. If you are looking for a ransom, I can tell you I don't have money. But what I do have are a very particular set of skills. Skills I have acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. If you let my daughter go now, that'll be the end of it. I will not look for you. I will not pursue you. But if you don't, I will look for you. I will find you. And I will kill you.
Good luck.
Mighty Ballin' listeners, I'm here again today as longtime guest, longtime pal, long live the king, my editor-in-chief.
That's me.
Michael Luxembourg.
Hey, it's me. It's Lux, right here on the microphone talking to you people out there in podcast town.
And we're here today talking to you about basketball, and I would say that we have a fair bit of dedication to this podcast after spending at least 100 years working on this microphone setup that I finally got so that, I mean, maybe this microphone is broken. Not microphone is broken. Maybe this audio is completely screwed up. I don't think so.
I think it looks fine. Okay. It looks good. And we played it back before and it sounded fine.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, the listener will have to let us know. And, you know, you can do that by tweeting at Almighty Ballin or at
ML Surfboard. But you probably tweet at Almighty Ballin because I don't do any of the audio stuff.
Yeah, you should just tweet at me. It's my fault. Well, so anyways, all summer long, if you're a summertime listener, I don't know why you are. You should listen during the regular season. And part of the reason why you should listen during the regular season is because multiple times, hopefully a week, but at least on a regular basis, Michael Luxembourg is going to be joining me to break down the news as it happens.
Yeah, fresh, hot off the presses news. Game recaps, talking about dunks, sports, and threes, sporting news for the people on a regular basis.
Absolutely. Well, and, you know, since I've been doing these team previews during the summer, Lux hasn't been on for a while. And so, Lux, what I want to know is, what have you been thinking about? What's been bouncing around that big old noggin of yours?
All right, well, I know there's a few things that you're going to talk about in some other podcasts, but obviously I've been thinking about the Wolves, because I'm always thinking about the Wolves and how they're going to be great. But in more, I guess, less certain to be redundant thoughts, thinking a lot about D'Angelo Russell recently. He's just been lighting people up in the preseason and looking like all kinds of a stud. And my first thought is, what are we expecting out of the Lakers now that D'Angelo is a real hit? What do we expect out of the Lakers this season with Luke Walton and, you know, the newly taking flight D'Angelo Russell?
So I just did a podcast with the guys from Lakers Legacy talking about their young core, talking about their expectations for the next season. But, you know, they are Lakers fans and they're Lakers podcasters, so I didn't talk about a lot of the negatives. I even tried to justify the Mozgov contract, which...
You know, that was a stupid thing to do.
It makes some sense, though. I don't know. I'm not sure I want to get into it, but...
Yeah, no, I mean, can avoid it.
Okay, so one of the things that I brought up in my Western Conference team previews is, who on the Lakers team is an above-average starter at their position? And the reason I think that's important is because I feel like if this Lakers team is going to break, say, 30 wins, three of those players have to be above average. And if you want to pencil in D'Angelo, I'm okay with that. I'm penciling him in, though. I'm not penning him in.
Right, you wouldn't do it in Sharpie. Because, I mean, he's done well in the preseason, but, you know, we'll see how that translates. And, I mean, some of the flaws in his game are still readily apparent. like sometimes he can be pretty hesitant sometimes on when he's probing the defense, and he pulls up for shots sometimes when he doesn't have a great look. But he's like decision making's gotten so much better. His stroke has looked a lot nicer. He's a lot willing to just catch and shoot now. All of which I think contributes to him potentially becoming a real major player this year.
I think D'Angelo is going to be good. He'll be a lot better than he was in Byron Scott's system. You know, they had like 6 assists lower than the 29th worst team in assists last year, or something ridiculous like that. There's no ball movement. And, you know, one thing I do have a concern about with D'Angelo Russell is that it seems like he would be such a natural fit. I think he's the closest thing to a James Harden in the league first.
Yeah, like, and I think that comp is pretty strong.
Yeah, and so, you know, my Daryl Morey brain is telling me that he should have someone like Dwight Howard, who's obviously not Dwight Howard because Dwight sucks. He doesn't suck. I just can't. He should have like a rim-rolling center, but that doesn't exist. And, you know, people are like, well, you look at Tariq Black when he's on the floor. Like, Tariq Black, he's a lot better than people think. You know, I would tap the brakes on that for a little bit.
Well, the thing with that is, like, even if Tariq Black's a lot better than people think, it still doesn't make him very good.
Well, yeah, and I think that he looks good. He looks good with the starters because he's a rim roller. He's just, like, an inadequate one. So it makes me wonder how good they would be if that did exist in their offense. Because, yeah, it's really nice that Mozgov's going to be setting picks. I really like that. But, I mean, without knowing whether or not Julius Randle is going to be able to be that type of guy for the Lakers, I'm concerned, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess almost the underlying question to the Russell question is, like, just how much of an improvement do we imagine Luke Walton is over Byron Scott tangibly on the floor?
Well, I think he's a massive improvement, but, you know, you can only do so much with bad players.
Yeah, for sure. But, like, I wonder how much you can get out of players like Randle or, god dang, the super skinny three-point shooting kid from Ingram.
Yeah.
Players like Randle and Ingram, I feel like, could be really well maximized in, like, that sort of versatile, switchy, play multiple roles type of offense. Because, like, both of them have pretty wide skill sets. Ingram, I think, has sort of higher high points in his skill set than Randle. But Randle can do a lot of things pretty well.
So
that kind of heavy motion offense, I think, plays to their strengths.
I think that's another one of those things where, I mean, at least in terms of next year, what is Ingram good at?
He can shoot. His passing this preseason's been way better than expected.
Yeah,
in terms of just shooting the ball. They've been letting him handle the ball and run the point even a little bit. And that would be an interesting experiment to have him and Russell on the floor both, you know, initiating the offense.
You know,
could be some interesting biz.
One thing I brought up in my Lakers team preview with Anthony Irwin and Harrison Fagan was, you know, I just don't think that Ingram projects to be all that great of an offensive player, because I don't expect for players, even Ingram, to be able to develop Kawhi Leonard sort of, you know, shot creation-y type game without explosion, you know?
But, like, I mean, even in the preseason, he showed some flashes of, like, what it could look like if he did generate. Like, there was one...
He showed a flash. He had one good game.
But there were a couple good moments, I thought, that were more telling, like, the game in particular. Like, against Golden State, when he went straight into, I think it was Iguodala's chest. Like, there was a play where, like, he had Iguodala backing up, but he just went straight into Iguodala's chest and hit, like, a pull-up over him. That kind of offense, that kind of... The ability to do that, that gets points at the end of shot clocks, that gets points in transition. That's the kind of place where, like, you could create a, you know, 10 points playing that kind of way, independent of other sort of, like, within the offense type of plays.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know if he's going to be able to bust it out all the time since he's a skinny little twig boy.
Yeah.
But if he bulks up, like, he has the brains to see where he can make that move, and he has the touch to make that shot. The only question for me is he going to get the size to be able to do that regularly without just getting decked all the time?
Yeah, I just think, you know, that's...
That's probably a couple of years down the road if that ever happens.
Yeah, well, I think probably the answer is no, he'll never have the size. But I guess there's ways of working around that. I think that that type of pull-up game is most affected by... I mean, next time Andre Iguodala would get up in him, you know? Because, like, it's not like Ingram's going to beat him, right, on the way to the rim, and it's not like you're going to be able to go through Iguodala, so you just, like, would get up in his chest, and I guess, you know, to me, Ingram, I don't think he's going to have a good rookie season. I think he'll maybe start rounding into form his sophomore season. But I'll grant that perhaps while other teams try to figure out how to play him, he might be good. But then he'll have that sophomore slump once everyone realizes how to do it.
Like I said, I think that the flashes he's shown haven't been like, oh, here's a replicable skill that you'll just be able to do every single game and this will mean you're good now. But they're sort of the more nuanced pieces of what his game could look like. And they're really good foundations for what his game could look like 3 years down the road. Because he's like a skinny dude. So if he bulks up a little bit and can take Iguodala in his chest and still get that shot off, because he's got long arms and a super high release point.
Yeah.
Like if he can bulk up to like keep himself straight when he's got contact on his shots, stuff like that, then he could be a real player. But I don't think, obviously it's not going to happen this year. But I think if it does happen, he could be strong. But I think you're right that, like, you know, there's questions about Ingram, there's questions about Randall, there's questions about Nance, there's questions about Mozgov, there's questions about basically everyone on the roster. And, you know, as much as Luke Walton is, I think, instituting an offense that maximizes a lot of their...
If you think trains will stop if they see a car on the tracks, you're right, they will. About a mile after they hit you. In 2015 alone, 230 people were killed at railroad crossings. Don't become the next fatality. Stop. Trains can't. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Strengths. I think we're going to see a more interesting Lakers team on the floor this year. Just watchability scale.
Yeah.
Because it was just ugly brick chucking last year. It was just horrible. And I think we're going to see a slightly better results record-wise. But yeah, I think you're right. I don't think there's going to be a major jump in terms of team quality this season.
Yeah. I think that they're at that low enough talent threshold that... I mean, I have problems taking their 25 over-under, honestly. Because
yeah,
they're at that low talent threshold where... You know, even though there's this massive coaching upgrade, you just can only do so much. You know?
Right, I mean, we've seen it in Philly, right? Like, Brett Brown is clearly a very good coach.
I think there's questions about that.
I don't know, man.
I fully expect him to be really good. I mean...
I like the ideas that they show on offense. I like the way their transition defense stuff works. I think that they play hard for him. But, like, Jane, it's impossible to really know for sure... Because even if he was the best coach in the universe with that roster, right, yeah, like he couldn't do much better than he's doing.
Yeah. I definitely get that, and I definitely agree with you on that point. You know, we have to question whether or not he's good because they're not good. And if... I mean, honestly, I feel like we would have to do that with Walton if he hadn't coached a perfect record for like 27 games.
Yeah,
while Kirk came
very
back.
Impressive. Good job, Luke.
But I feel like they might be in a position, the Lakers this year, where Luke just can't do so much. And I think that, you know, you can think yourself into the hula hoops necessary to say that the Lakers management recently has made a lot of the right moves. So what I mean is like letting Kobe just like, you know, do the basketball equivalent of face roll, got them so that they were the second worst record in the league, and they kept their pick, right? And one could definitely argue that that was the right decision. The problem is, this next year is really the pick that you want to keep. And now, I think that, you know, the answer to... I mean, clearly, there's been a lot... Have you read any of the recent reports about the fractious relationship? Jeannie Buss just had an interview.
Yeah, or the Jeannie Buss stuff.
So, that's been a thing for a while, right? But you couldn't argue that their management was ineffective while they were winning multiple championships, even though that tension was still a thing back when Phil Jackson was coaching all of that. So, I think the question that's going to be answered this year, if this is a 25-win team, then... Okay, if they're not like the second or third worst team in the league, they either need to break 35 wins or be under 25 wins. If they land in that 25 to 35 category, then they're dumb. Because if they keep their pick this year, then they would have to give away their pick next year. But if they got a great player and improved a lot, they'd be giving away like a 15, number 15 in the draft, right? And you can't give away your first-round pick in consecutive years. So that pick that they gave to Orlando as part of Dwight Howard trade, would just cease to exist, and they would have to get it because you can't give away your pick two times in a row. So
does that rule work retroactively?
What do you mean?
Like, they've traded both picks conditionally in both years.
Yeah.
So the conditions for both are met, the second one just goes back to them?
Yeah. So
really?
They don't have to give away their pick to Orlando.
That seems like a... I understand why the Stepien rule exists and like why you can't give away two things in a row. But that seems like a really shady workaround. Right? Like, they're just conditionally handing out picks, and then as long as, like, if they do meet all the conditions they give, they just don't have to give some of them away?
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
Well, I think it turns into a second rounder or something.
Word. Well, whatever it is, that's bizarre.
But I mean, like, they would keep their top three pick if they're bad, right? And the reason I said they have to be over 35 or under 25, because if they, with this given core, right, with their youth, if they're over 35, then I'm sufficiently convinced that they might be able to turn this into something attractive enough for them to get a free agent that would make up for that.
Some of the draft pick difference.
Pick, right.
Especially because this year's draft, if prognosticators are to be believed this early,
if you have a top three pick in next year's draft...
Yeah, well, apparently from what they say, I mean, you know, it's always impossible to actually project this early far away, but, like, word on the street is that the 2017 draft is, like, stacked.
Yeah.
Not even, like, 1-3, but, like, 1-5 or 6 with, like, playable, potential, right-away impact players.
Yeah.
And that is a bad time to be trading your lottery pick away.
Right, yeah. No, yeah. Yeah,
because you got like what? You got like Lonzo Ball, Markelle Fultz, DeAndre Ayton.
Because right, others. I mean, I feel like there's two universes. If they're under 25, then they clearly weren't good, and they needed to pick up that player, right? But if they're between 25 and 35, I think that's still true. But they won't get their pick, and if they get over 35, then they're good enough that they should maybe be okay.
Yeah, I think that's a fair appraisal. All right, speaking of giving away draft picks, let's talk about the Nets and the Knicks.
Are you excited to watch the Nets? Because I'm sort of excited about it.
Well, okay, cool. I was going to ask you about that because I think that I went through some weird shit in my head about the Nets in that, like, obviously that roster's not, I don't know, the roster's a pretty barren wasteland. But then the more I think about it, the more it's like, Jeremy Lin can be fun. Brook Lopez can be fun. They've got a ton of young dudes who are going to take their shots.
Okay.
And who are going to get, like, opportunities to play. I like Sean Kilpatrick a lot. And they don't have draft picks. So there's not even, like, an incentive for them to, like, trade dudes away or, like, get worse.
Well, there's an incentive to trade Brook Lopez.
Right. Okay. Yeah. There's incentive to trade Lopez, I guess. But that's about it. It almost feels like John Wick or something. Like, one of those movies where, like, some action dude is, like, I've got nothing left to lose, so I'm going to go all out and destroy the whole mafia. It feels like that almost, in that, like...
Wait,
like, it's okay, not so like the structure or the foundation of the team is going to get any worse.
Can the title of this podcast be The Nets Are the Liam Neeson of the NBA?
They might be, right?
Their wife, their daughter, everything's taken from them.
Everything's been taken. The Celtics
are, like, European gangsters.
The Celtics are the Albanians?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, basically, though, right? Like,
Good luck.
They don't have... anything, but then there's like every single player on that team except for Lin and Lopez basically is like playing for a career.
Yeah,
you know, and that's exciting in and of itself, and like that could be good. Like that could be like not good, but
they could be
like players. Could they be better than the Knicks?
Well, Carmelo Anthony just by himself.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, Carmelo hasn't fallen off.
I guess, like, Melo and Porzingis will carry that team. It's like, you're going to quit Knicks aside is like, I hate their roster aside from Melo and Porzingis.
What?
There's what's there. There's like Joakim Noah and his zombie legs. Derrick Rose, who's legally embroiled and not, I guess he's been acquitted, but not that good anymore.
Yeah.
Langston Galloway. No, he's not even there anymore, is he?
Yeah, no, he's on the Pelicans.
Yeah, they got Brandon Jennings, who's like...
Brandon Jennings.
my favorite temptation in the world. But like, I know how the story ends. It happens to me every dang year. Like, I don't know. I just, like, feel like their roster is hot slime.
Well, I think that perhaps they're not... okay, they're not that bad. Like, we should at least give them that. I mean, I think, you know, it's more than you can say about, like Jose Calderon, right, that you can say about Derrick Rose that at least he gets to the basket, right? You can't say that about Jose Calderon. No, he gets to the basket. He just doesn't finish anymore.
He doesn't finish, and he also doesn't really pass out of there either. So I guess, like, yeah, sure, like, he physically gets himself and the ball towards the basket. Whether or not that's a net good thing is still up for debate.
Well, but, you know, the two big men that he's going to be playing alongside are Porzingis, who should stretch the floor pretty well, and Joakim Noah, who there's been a time when the two of them were pretty much like the best pick and roll tandem in the league.
Straight up, one of Joakim Noah's legs is going to disintegrate during a game in February.
He's been okay in the preseason.
I'm sorry. That's why I said in February. Just give him some time for that leg to fall apart, because it will fall apart. Like, I don't know. Like, I wrote in the preview I wrote for AlmightyBaller.com, the website. You can check it out. I wrote previews of random teams that were on my mind. I was working on a lot of video stuff during the summer, so I didn't get a chance to do full previews. But I wrote of the Knicks, and my thing of the Knicks was that they remind me of a blue dwarf star, which is a sort of astrological or astronomical event that is purely theoretical, but it's when a red dwarf star starts running out of hydrogen to, like, continue existing. Oh, it's like what happens before it becomes a black hole.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's like, that's, the Knicks are like that to me, in that, like, the franchise is, like, glow as, like, this magical, like, bastion of basketball magic is, like, fading away. And they're just, like, trying their hardest, like, throw whatever they can into the mix to bring eyeballs back to Madison Square Garden. Like, that's what, like, because there are better signings to make this summer than Rose or Noah.
Well, I guess my thing with the Knicks is, I think maybe the lashback against the people who are like, ah, oh, this team is f***ing dope, wouldn't be as significant if Knicks fans were like, this, you know, this team could easily win 42 wins.
Well, yeah, I think, you know? I think, like, there's that, but I also think my bigger thing with the Blue Dwarf Star thing is that, like, for whatever reason it is, like, the Knicks are always one of the talked about teams. You know what I mean? Like, we're all, like,
because the Knicks.
Because they're the Knicks, exactly. So, like, I think part of the backlash you're talking about isn't necessarily that Knicks fans were exuberant about the squad. It's that, like, there are obvious flaws with the squad, and yet we're still, as, like, basketball talky people, obligated to engage with them in, like, a serious way because they're the Knicks, and for no other reason.
I think a lot of people are just dismissing the Knicks. I said this recently, that I've been defending the Knicks and saying that the Knicks are going to be better than people think, but the problem is, the people who I listen to and the people who I follow on Twitter are smart, so they're saying that the Knicks are bad, right? When the general consensus might be that the Knicks, like, might win the East or something bullshit like that, right? So it depends who you're talking to. I follow people who generally know basketball, and I think that they're responding with a little bit too much, like, venom to the Knicks in saying, okay, this isn't going to be a 50-win team, right? So all I'm saying, when I say they're going to be better than people think, is that they're going to be 40 instead of 30. But if you're talking to someone else, it could be, oh, the Knicks are a 50-win team.
Yeah, I mean, like I'm saying, I think that, I don't disagree with you that there's a universe where, like, they win 42 games. I just think that it's, like, that's a pretty high percentile outcome for this roster. I think that maybe there's, like, a 90th percentile season for them, they win 45 games, you know what I mean? But that, like, the 50th percentile season for them is, like, 35 or 32 even.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, honestly, I can't put my finger on the Knicks super well, because I understand the excitement, you know, and, like, if you were if I could sit here and be the devil's advocate, which is, you know, which works because Derrick Rose is on the team.
Starring Keanu Reeves and Al Pacino.
Yeah. So I mean, I could sit here and say, you know, sophomore year Porzingis is going to be good, right? You know, in 2012, 2013, Joakim Noah was fourth in MVP voting. Carmelo Anthony has not really dropped off. Derrick Rose couldn't finish when he was next to Joakim Noah, and he was next to Pau Gasol because the spacing was f***ed up. He needed a change of environment. I could also say, well, Derrick Rose doesn't need to be that great because Brandon Jennings is going to come in and be good, which I think is sort of true.
Well, I think, I mean, we've talked about this on the show before. I always think Brandon Jennings is going to come in and be pretty good, even when I know he's not. And I think that's true this year, too. But I just also, the part of me that keeps falling in love with and then having my heart broken by Brandon Jennings is saying, you know, I'm going to think he's going to be great, and then he's going to get hurt or do something dumb and get himself benched or something bad's going to happen. But like I was saying, it's like I often think that Brandon Jennings is going to be good and put up numbers, but then, you know, XYZ thing happens and it doesn't work out. And I'm just worried about having that happen again this year. Okay, but back to the Nets. So, like, yeah, I guess we're on the same page. I guess we're on the same page with the Nets, right? There's something really exciting about this kind of team.
So, you know, and even that aside, I'm not sure if you've ever, like, listened to Kenny Atkinson talk or...
Oh, yeah, a little bit. Know. I like his words.
So, yeah, same. But I just think, you know, he's in this unique opportunity where... He could totally just put 5 point guards out there.
Hey, he's
why not?
He's in total test kitchen territory. Like,
yeah, like he can do whatever.
Yeah, there's like, well, that's the thing. That's why I am getting excited of this team, right? Is like, they're like the Sixers, but so much less cynical in that, like, because I was really into those process teams where it was just like a bunch of young dudes playing for contracts, basically.
Yeah.
But this is that, but it's not because of some weird Silicon Valley Sam Hinkie, President Abraham Lincoln type strategy. It was...
Because of the fall of the Soviet Union. It's the opposite of capitalistic.
Right, exactly. It's their response to... It's the result of nickel mining in the Soviet, in the post-Soviet oligarchies. Like, yeah. It's...
It actually is, though. Like, he's like a...
No, oh, yeah. He's a mining man. but, yeah. It's wild to me just because, like... There's so much freedom on the coaching and the playing end. People are going to get chances to really make names for themselves. Expectations are low, but the team is interesting. They've got some players. Jeremy Lin's been tearing the postseason apart or preseason apart. Well, he's like shooting like close to 50 with like 28 points, like 7 assists. He's been putting up some numbers. I think those numbers are reported by my memory of a tweet, but. I don't know. I don't think they're going to be good, obviously, but I do think that they very much have the potential to be very, very fun. Like, I think they could be really fun, and I think they could do some real, just, like, weird business.
62% from the field.
Jeez.
50% from three. He's been good. He's going to do good, man. I mean, he's another one of those guys who...
I think the first thing that happens when you're a point guard who plays... alongside James Harden is that they take you to your house and then hold you back while they burn your house down and say, like, you don't mean shit. You don't handle the ball here. This is James Harden's, you know? And that pretty much happened also in L.A. And then he was told to sit on the bench in Charlotte. I mean, Jeremy Lin's had a rough go of it, and no one has really said, like, you know, this is Jeremy Lin. Like... Lin Sanity. He has a documentary about him. Like, here are the keys to this car, now drive it for a while. So,
and
I mean...
He's a legitimately sexually viable Asian male, and that's hard to find. People aren't comfortable with that. But wait, now what? He's here. It's a media joke, but, you know, you just don't see a lot of sexually viable Asian males on television.
Well, I don't get it. Sexually viable? Like,
yeah, like, get a sexually attractive Asian male. They just don't see them on television that often. Anyways, there is a weird component of that to the Jeremy Lin stuff, but also, like, yeah, he just hasn't gotten a shot to, like, run his team, and I think that this is his biggest chance to, like, really be major. And I think he's going to take it. I think he's going to do a good job. Speaking of James Harden, let's talk about the Rockets for a second. James Harden's a point guard now. What do you think?
I don't think that really, like, the biggest difference to me is that it shaves time that used to be wasted getting the ball to James Harden.
See, I think there's one other component to that that is under-talked about, I guess. Or at least I haven't heard it be talked about much. Which is, like, the defensive component to that, right? Like, if he's the point guard, then you could have play a shooting guard next to him.
But he's not going to be covering point guards on defense.
Well, maybe he covers a shooting guard and you have a bigger, longer, more effective... You can get a second better defender on the floor. James Harden plus lengthy shooting guard is a better defensive duo than James Harden and even Patrick Beverley.
Well, but, I mean, I don't think so.
I think James Harden doesn't have the foot speed. I think James Harden plays defense like someone who's 6'8". I mean, his...
Right, I'm not saying the upgrades on James Harden. James Harden's always just going to guard the weakest dude on the court, offensively.
Well,
like they'll hide him wherever they can hide him. But the other dude on the court with him will be a better defender than the alternative would be.
I'm saying, like, in the Super D'Antoni small ball lineups that they've run, James Harden has covered the power forward. Like, James Harden can't cover point guards.
Right, but I'm not talking about how this affects James Harden's defense. Like, they're going to hide him where they hide him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you have to at this point. But rather, by not playing traditional point guard, they get to play another, like, long arm, long leg, 3-and-D type dude on the court.
But that's what they've been doing with Beverly.
Beverly's not that long. Beverly's a short, stocky bulldog guy who gets beat by, like, real quick dudes or people who can get around him.
Well,
like, they'll be able to get a more versatile defender than Beverly on the floor.
I mean, I think you're describing KJ McDaniels right now.
I mean, McDaniels would be a good option for that. I think that this opens up a lot more potential good defensive matchups for the Rockets than it would have been if Beverly or I don't know, like, formerly Ty Lawson or whoever is on the floor next to him.
Well, so, but they still have to have someone who covers point guards, though.
Right, but that could be a 3-and-D type dude. That's a harder matchup for the point guard.
But that's what Patrick Beverly is.
But he's not. He's not.
He's 3-and-D.
But he's 3-and-D, but he's small for point guards now, even. Like, compared to other point guards, he's small. Yeah, he's 6'1", so, like, that's pretty small for an NBA point guard. And I'd rather have that size matchup and someone who's, like, able to just, like, run and switch on D more and cover more dudes and just play on the perimeter, and you get that by having James Harden point guard. Like, it just gives them a ton more roster flexibility.
Okay, I think I...
Or, like, lineup flexibility, I guess.
Yeah, I think I finally got what you were saying.
Yeah, word.
Right? Like, most point guards... Most guys who run your offense are going to be small because they're going to be point guards. But now you don't have to have a small guy who runs your offense because James Harden is running your offense. So the complementary pieces that you put around James Harden can be whatever position you want. So, yeah, no. I mean, I think that the Suns are...
You can get a lot closer to being like that positionless, like seven seconds or less Suns style thing.
Yeah. I think they're going to start... I mean, first, Patrick Beverly is having
knee surgery.
Right, so... In the preseason, they started, and I think they're going to continue to start KJ McDaniels. And I've been going ham for KJ, man. I went on Lockdown Rockets to talk about KJ because I published that article, KJ McDaniels at Draymond in the Rough, a while back. Shout out Ben DuBose. So yeah.
I love KJ McDaniels. And, like, yeah, that's a really great example of what they could do. I just think that they have an interesting lineup versatility that a lot of other teams do not.
I think the Rockets are going to be one of the best teams in the West. I think that people are seeing their offense and how great it is. And since their defense isn't as good, they're overcompensating for the gap by saying, yeah, their offense is great, but their defense sucks. It's like, no, their offense is great, but their defense is like, meh, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm torn on the Rockets because I think what you just said is 100% correct. In that, like, their offense is clearly going to be great. I think their defense is better than people are giving it credit for.
Like, Trevor Ariza's really good.
Yeah, right? I like Ariza a lot.
Like, when PBEV comes back, he'll be really good. Yeah. I think KJ McDaniels,
I like McDaniels a lot.
Yeah. Clint Capella.
Can play.
I think Clint Capella is great because, you know, Nene, I think, when he's on the court, is, like, a starting center, but shouldn't play a starting center's minutes because he's, like, 36. He'll
die.
Yeah. And so, like... If Capella gets into really big foul trouble or something, then Nene can play more minutes than usual and just, like, rest a little bit more the next game or whatever. So, and then Capella's just good, you know?
Yeah, no, I think they've got some good pieces. The only thing is they're going to give up transition points.
Why?
Nene's very slow getting back. Harden might be one of the slowest getting back that there is.
They're one of the best... transition defenses in the league back when they gave a f-.
Yeah, maybe, but, like, I don't know. I think the D'Antoni system lends itself to other teams running. I think the West is full of teams that can run real good. I think it's going to be, like, when you say one of the best teams in the West, like, what do you mean? Because I think that they probably could end up 6-4 somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. They could even...
I'd say the Clippers, Warriors, and... I would say Clippers, Warriors, and Spurs are all kind of decidedly better.
We were going to talk about the Spurs. What do you think about the Spurs?
I'm just interested in seeing what the offense looks like, suppose Tim Duncan. And also how that offense... Because from what I've seen in the preseason and what I've read and talked to people about, it really does seem like their offense is, like, slow.
Yeah.
Like, brick shoes slow.
Yeah.
And...
But that's fine.
Yeah, totally fine. But it's like, the NBA is shifting the other direction. I'm curious to see, like, how they exploit matchups with teams, how teams exploit matchups with them. It really looks like they're just going to cook people in the mid-range all season.
Yeah.
I mean, you're like a big old analytics boy. Like, doesn't that feel weird to you?
Well, no. I think that part of the thing with analytics is that if you're a team defensively, like, the Spurs are funny. On one hand... they want to kill you in the mid-range. But on the other hand, they had the best defense in the league last year by, like, you know, every morning praying to the analytic principle of you want your opposing team to shoot mid-range shots. Like,
wait, doesn't that feel disjunctive to you?
It's weird because they had this historically great defense by having... you know, two bigs like LaMarcus and Tim Duncan, who are good enough defenders to contest reasonably, but slow and big enough that if you curled around a screen, they would hang back and you would say, oh, I have an open mid-range pull-up, which you would then take. And then they used Tim Duncan and LaMarcus Aldridge to get every rebound that would happen off of that. And there would be a lot because you don't make pull-up mid-range jump shots. But that's what they're going
to
do.
Right, but that's... Right, I'm saying, like, their whole defense was to get other teams to play their offense.
Right, yeah.
Which, and they've chosen to play this offense. It's not, like, a mistake. But it's interesting to me, right, that that's what they want to do. And, like, I think they have the parts to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's going to be good, but it's, like...
It was good. They won 67 wins last year. I think, you know, that defense that I just described to you, why can't Pau Gasol do that? Why can't he...
Oh, he totally... He can. I feel like he totally can just slip into the Tim Duncan spot, like...
Because, like, that Tim Duncan, like, the reason why Tim Duncan was so good there is because you never overextend with your bigs. I mean, Pau Gasol on defense doesn't need to be quick on his feet. He needs to be quick with his hands. Because you're going to stay within 10 feet of the basket on defense always because you're saying, take a shot that is anywhere from 12 to 16 feet, be my guest. I'm going to corral the rebound after you probably miss that. But if you get closer than 10 feet... you don't need to be, you know, Anthony Davis to block a shot because if you're within 10 feet of the basket, Pau Gasol will be able to get his arm out there. And, like, you just have to have good reaction time with your arms. I mean, I think Pau Gasol is going to step in and be a much better offensive option than Tim Duncan and be able to do what Tim Duncan did on defense admirably.
Yeah, I know. I think you're right. It's just, like... just weird, man.
It is weird.
It's a weird setup.
I love it. I like it a lot.
And it seems like it's built to, like, counter, like, the Golden State small ball lineup pretty effectively. Like, if there's a way to answer, like, that switch-happy defense, it's just mid-range jumpers.
Like, oh, yeah, well, but their defense, though, Golden State Warriors don't shoot mid-range jump shots, really.
Right, so it's like, it seems like the Spurs were like, we can talent and coach our way around basically any team in the West except for Golden State, and we're going to need to do, like, design a really serious, like, specific plan for Golden State, and who cares about anyone else that we're gonna play against? We'll figure that shit out.
That's the way that Pop talked all season long. Is like,
yeah,
I just haven't figured out the fucking Warriors. It's like it would be like a Thursday night, and he'll have just pounded the Hornets by 20 points, and in his post game interview, he's just like, those fucking Warriors.
Yeah, for real. I
haven't figured them out yet.
And, like, that's how it feels. And it's in, like, that's so interesting. And they're going to be, the Spurs are going to be fucking good.
They're going to be good. And you know what? Honestly, here's what I think is going to happen, okay? I think they're going to move Tony Parker to the bench, right? And Tony Parker, I don't so much like as a starting point guard. Patty Mills, I do, though. He was really good in the Olympics, and he's like a great three-point shooter. Like, he spaces the floor, and they really need that, right? Okay, so I think Patty Mills is going to be a really good point guard. And, like, yeah, Manu and Tony Parker are old, but they're gonna run the bench, and in those minutes they're gonna kill.
Oh yeah, if they have Manu and Tony Parker, like, captaining the bench squad, they're gonna tear teams apart.
Yeah, that's such a bench 1-2 punch.
Like, yeah, I mean, that's always, you know, an important component, especially if you can bring a couple starter quality players off the bench, even in limited minutes like that.
Yeah, so they're
that
gonna,
can change the complexion of games real fast.
I understand people saying that the Clippers are going to be better than the Spurs. In fact, I said that, but I think that you think about it enough, and I've done that at this point, and I've ultimately come to the conclusion, like, the Spurs cruised to 67 wins last year, and they will do it again.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the Clippers versus Spurs thing, but it sounds like you got your consensus.
I think that your knee-jerk reaction is that, oh, the Clippers are better than the Spurs now, but if you look at it deeper, the Spurs are better than they appear at first, and the Clippers are worse than they appear at first.
Right, yeah. All right, let's move back to the East. I want to talk about the Bucks because what? I find them fascinating.
So, I'm not sure... Well, okay, so talk about what fascinating means, because I think they're just going to be bad.
Like, they play that super swarming, switch-happy, aggressive defense. That, like, blitz-crazy defense. And they can run out multiple lineups where everyone is, like, 6'7 or taller.
Well, yeah, but Jabari Parker can't play defense. And I feel like the only two people on that roster who can really actually make offense... did I say two? I meant three. Greg Monroe, Jabari, and Giannis. There's no good lineup that doesn't have Giannis on the floor because Jabari... I mean, God forbid you have Greg Monroe and Jabari on the court at the same time. Like, your defense is going to be garbage. And
well, that's why this Chris Middleton thing kind of throws a real wrench in
the Well, I mean, that's my thing, is that I think the thing with the Bucks is that the Chris Middleton thing, assuming that he comes back and he's the same player he was before... Did you hear about his hamstring injury?
I don't know exactly what happened. I just know it did happen.
He's out for 6 months on a hamstring injury. It came off the bone.
Yikes.
So hamstring issues can plague you. He might be permanently affected. And, like, I really hope he doesn't, because I think Chris Middleton's great. And, like, you know, is...
Like, if he... That's the thing, is maybe my enthusiasm for the Bucks is just residual Chris Middleton enthusiasm. But, like, a lineup of Giannis, Brogdon, Middleton, Parker, Henson could really, really fuck some shit up.
Well, I mean...
Both ends of the court.
So like, why would you put Brogdon before you would put Dele?
Because I would rather just have, like, just an army of 3-and-D boys, dude. Brogdon can shoot and
play
D. That's
what Dele does.
Dele's 3-point shoot... Dele's a smaller, less athletic, less quick defender than Brogdon.
Dele's a really good defender.
He's fine, but...
And Dele's never shot under 40% from three.
I would rather have Brogdon than Dele. I bet, I'm telling you, Malcolm Brogdon's going to be solid.
He's not going to be better than Dele in his rookie year, man. I mean, Dele...
I'm not too sure of that, man.
Okay, so first, Dele has never had a negative plus-minus, even in the year... The ghosts... Happy Halloween, everyone.
Spooky shower.
So, like, he was the only player on the Cavaliers the year that LeBron hadn't gotten to the Cavaliers yet, when it was just Kyrie plus Dele plus, like, no one, you know? I guess Tristan Thompson was on that team. But, so, Dele's really good. That's my point. Dele's good.
I feel like we've
Dele's the guy who you would want if you were wanting 3-and-D switchy guys.
I don't think so, man. I think he gets bossed around by bigger dudes in the wing all the time. Brogdon's 6'6". With, like, a mega-long arm and leg span. He's got crazy spans, bro. His spans are off the dang charts.
Yeah.
He's just more switchable than Dellavedova.
Yeah, but I don't know. I've heard good things about him. The fact that you might be right, even though he's a rookie, means something.
I think, normally,
I would just, like, say, like, bam, no, you're wrong.
I think Brogdon's got potential to be... He's also, like, an older rookie, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's 23.
And there's something to that in certain cases. That I think that, like, a 23-year-old who's used to, like, leading a pretty good team and playing, like, a pretty complicated defensive scheme in college comes out and is probably pretty ready to adapt, you know?
Yeah.
Especially, like, I mean, I don't know. This might be reading a lot into psychology, but I am prone to do that. But, like, if you're Malcolm Brogdon, right, and you've been, like, the best player on UVA for, like, 3 years, but your team keeps getting smoked by the fact that, like, these random 19-year-olds who are now NBA veterans as you show up in the NBA after your senior year. I feel like that dude knows and, like, understands, like, he's used to not being the best dude on the court. You know what I mean?
That's not a good thing.
But isn't it, in a way, kind of, though? Like, Chris, this gets like the Chris Dunn shit in Minnesota, right? Chris Dunn's used to being able to use his quickness and athleticism to dance his way into positions where he doesn't have to make like complicated decisions or quick decisions. But now that's not the case anymore. And now he makes crazy turnovers all the time. But my point with Brogdon is that like I think there is a certain value to being used to realizing that like you're part of a system that you can't overcome all obstacles on the court just by like pure athleticism or ability. And I think that is makes him ideal to like to fit into like this kind of like switchy, fast rotating defensive scheme.
Yeah, I get what you're saying with Brogdon. Keep in mind though, Dellavedova is used to playing alongside Kyrie and LeBron. If he doesn't know what it's like to not
be fair enough. Yeah, he probably has learned that lesson by now. Okay, trying to think of what other teams jump out. Is there anything that you are excited about for the season that jumps out at you in a big way?
I'm excited to have you back on the podcast more.
Woo woo! Yeah, I'm excited to be recording regularly again. I'm doing a dance with my arms. You can't see it because you're just listening to it.
Yeah.
But it's a real good dance.
So my guest has been at ML Surfboard.
ML Surfboard.
ML. I always thought that it was an MLS joke, like a Major League Soccer
joke. No. It was a pen name that I used to write plays in college. And then...
I should have guessed.
And then I just made it my Twitter for no reason. And then I got a bunch of followers right away that were all surfboard companies who have since left and they realized that I do not surf or tweet about surfing at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, ML Surfboard, that's where you can find me. I'll be trying to tweet more regularly and keep putting podcasts and articles out. And I'll be editing almightyballer.com's text content. So take a look out for that shit, because it's good. We're getting some good stuff out.
Yeah, editor and chief.
Yeah, I'm excited to start recording regularly this season and to follow NBA action and bring news and opinions to all these fine listeners.
All right, well, follow at Almighty Ball and check out all the great podcasts we have on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network and all the awesome articles. Good night, Godspeed. Thanks for listening. The Nets are the Liam Neeson of the NBA.
Liam Neeson, not Liam Neeson.
What did I say?
You said Liam Neeson.
I was close.
Yeah, you spin around it. Good night and good luck.
Good night, good luck, Godspeed.
Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.